Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Chaz Moss Show, where we talk pro wrestling, life, and everything in between. But today, we're talking Backlash. That's right, we're talking Backlash. I just got done watching it, and I'm telling you, I'm jacked up about it. I don't know if you can tell or not. I thought overall, it was a very, very good, solid PLE. You know, I think start to finish, I thought the whole show was relatively pretty strong. Five really good matches were picked for this. I know a lot of people are complaining about, maybe not a lot of people, but some people, whatever. There's people complaining that, you know, you're paying all this money for, you know, the ESPN Plus, the unlimited plan, and, you know, you only get five matches. And then two of them were on ESPN2. But you know what? It is what it is. If you don't like the product, you don't have to watch it. You don't have to subscribe. You can always come back to silly little podcasts like this one or other ones, or just watch reviews of it later. But either way, let's sit back and let's just enjoy it, because it's professional wrestling. It's entertainment. It's fun. And that's what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be fun. So we start with Bron Breakker and Seth Rollins, which this feud has obviously been building for. Yeah. And ignore my background in the back. I don't know what's going on. I couldn't get to it. Technical difficulties, but whatever. Enjoy the different sceneries behind me that pop up. But anyway, it's a storyline that's been around, not around, but it's been brewing for months and months and months. And, you know, with the fact of Seth Rollins leaving the Vision because he got hurt, Bron Breakker kind of becoming the leader of the Vision after Seth got hurt, and then Bron getting hurt. And then, you know, then the Vision starts falling apart. Then Seth Rollins comes back, and his whole goal is to get after Paul Heyman. And then Bron Breakker comes back at WrestleMania and attacks Seth Rollins in his match with Gunther. You know, this is something that's been building for a good six, seven, 8 months. So to finally see them two head-to-head, I thought it was pretty good. I did like the start. I like how Bron came right after Seth, and Seth avoided him, and Seth got a little bit of steam on him. Bron, to me, at the beginning, looked maybe a little lost. You know, he didn't look his super regular aggressive self. I don't know if that was just part of the story they were trying to tell in the match, or if it's because, you know, Bron, again, he had been off also with an injury. And, you know, it takes time to – Bron's in amazing shape. He looks amazing. He is amazing. But being – looking at it and being in amazing shape and being in ring shape are two totally separate things. And anyone who's ever stepped into the ring, or actually anyone who stepped onto a field of play, you know, whether it's football, whether it's basketball, whether it's soccer, hockey, even baseball – being in game shape is different than being in shape. So, again, both of them had been off for a long time. Both of them had to get it back. And there was a couple of times in there you could see them maybe laboring, getting a little, you know, a little fatigued, a little blown up, maybe even. But either way, they got through it. And I think it was a solid match. The one part that did scare me a little bit was Seth's clothesline over the top. Looks like, you know, he obviously he didn't, but it looked like he took a chance at landing a little funky. He could have blown a knee out. Paul Heyman at ringside, he's just a treasure. You know, we all need to just enjoy Paul Heyman as long as we possibly can, as long as Paul will allow us, because just his reactions to everything happening in the match. You know, when the camera's right next to you, it's easy to react to something because you know the camera's there, you can see the light on, you know you're going to be, you know, you're on camera, so it's easy to react. But the shots from across the ring when Bron and Seth are selling here, and then here's Paul way back here selling, those are the moments that I thought were great with his reactions. You know, whether it was, oh my God, what's going on, or yeah, get him, Bron, or him talking to Bron during it. You know, he just brings so much, and that's one of the reasons why Bron has gotten as good as he has, as quickly as he has, is because of having Paul there. But again, I thought it was a great match. I thought they told the story very, very well. it actually, and it could have been again, because either the time aspect of it, how much time they had for the match, maybe it was because they were both kind of, even hate to say it, like fatigued or blown up, because of the long time they had off of being, you know, not really being back in ring shape. But it was a little bit slower than I expected. But I thought it was still great. And now it comes, what's next for both of them? But more importantly, you know, what's next for Seth? I know Seth came back, you know, his whole thing is, I want to take the Vision out. I want to get back at Paul Heyman. But he can't continue to try to take on the Vision by himself. So where does he get heat from? Where does he get help from? For instance, when Logan Paul and his partner came down to the ringside, when they came down, I was expecting maybe the Street Profits to come out and kind of help out there. And maybe now we lead into a six-man down the road. But without the Street Profits coming out, clearly, clearly, yes, they didn't come out. But clearly, it could still lead into a six-man. I don't know. But, you know, Seth's definitely going to need some help. That's not something, you know, he can do. You know, on his own. But you know what? It'll be fun to see. It's going to be interesting. You know, and I just want to clarify a couple of things. Yes, I'm giving some opinions here on how I feel. But just so you know, yes, I've been wrestling for, been in this business for over 30 years. I'm not giving my opinions from that aspect. I try to give them from a fan perspective because I still am a fan of professional wrestling. I love watching it. I look forward to it. So just to let you know, my opinions, you know, are just coming from more of a fan perspective and not being, I guess, in the business. So now we move on to, you have Trick Williams versus Sami Zayn for United States Championship, which we all know Trick won from Sami at WrestleMania. So this match is more of a, is Trick a one-trick pony? You like that pun there, didn't you? Was it a fluke that he won, or, you know, is he a legit champion? Is he a legit superstar now? You know, is it something that he earned, and can he, you know, keep it? A lot of stuff leading up to it. You know, the whole gingerbread man thing, the whole gingerbread funeral thing. I don't really know how I feel about the gingerbread funeral. I realize wrestling is entertainment and there's an entertaining aspect to it. I thought there were some funny spots to it. But at the same time, I thought it was kind of silly. But it led to where, you know, it led everyone down the path that they needed to be led to. Some of the funny parts I've really thought about it was Trick, you know, doing the singing and having the gospel and literally make, you know, kind of getting people to mourn a gingerbread puppet, a thing that's literally out on your front lawn that, you know, something that's not real, the whole funeral. I love Sami with it. I love Sami, you know, saying to Rey Mysterio during the funeral, hey, on SmackDown, hey, you know, you shouldn't be here. Like, you shouldn't be mourning this. Like, this isn't real. This is stupid. And Sami coming right out and saying, this is stupid. Like, what are you people doing to me? And then on SmackDown Friday night, I did think it was funny when Sami came out and said, Trick, you know, you say you're worried about your money. Your money's important to you. Well, how much money did you spend on this funeral? You know, I know how much roses are, and you had to have like 1,000 roses are. I did the math. You know how much they cost? A lot of money. Like, he never even threw out a number, which made it, to me, made it a little more comical. And then with the casket, Sami's like, that casket is real oak. I touched it. I know it's real oak. Do you know how much real oak costs? A lot of money. You know, the only part of this whole angle that I'm not, that part I don't get is Little Yachty being mixed in with Trick. I realize, you know, when you mix someone in like Little Yachty with the Trick Williams, it's to help get, you know, Trick over. It's to bring, not so much to get Trick over, I guess, but more spotlight on him from the non-common wrestling fan, someone who outside of wrestling goes, oh, what's Little Yachty doing on WWE? Let me tune in. Let me watch this. This could be interesting. That part I understand. But I think after WrestleMania, I think it's time for Little Yachty to kind of move on. So that's just my opinion. I got a little bit more about him in a second. And this is one of the reasons why I think it may be time for him to move on. You know, Trick is so – Sammy was a babyface. Trick is so over as a babyface now. And I realized Trick came in. He was supposed to be a heel. Crowd didn't want him to be heel, which I love. I love that when someone comes in with that persona and that attitude, and then this, the fans just say, listen, we like you. This is great. You know, whoop that Trick all day long. But Trick turned Sammy heel. And I liked how Sammy came out. Like, let me high five. I'm going to be me. I'm going to high five you. I'm going to try and keep you on my side. But at the same time, when they're booing you that bad, just get pissed off and turn heel, which he eventually did. He eventually did that at the end. I do like the fact that Sammy during a match finally freaked out on Little Yachty and just started pounding him, hit him with the candy cane kendo stick, and then lays him out with the big boot. And here's my problem with Little Yachty. The match is over. Trick goes over. Trick keeps the belt, which is great. But then Little Yachty's up after taking the boot to the back of the head and just laying there dead for however long he laid. All of a sudden now he's up and he's making it rain. He's making it rain dollars, which is fine. But at least sell the fact that he just got booted in the back of the head and you were laying down for 2 or 3 minutes, not moving. Sell that, Little Yachty. If you're going to be around, sell it. You can't get up and act like nothing happened. If you watch Trick, after Trick goes over, he's still selling the body part or the fact that he was just in a war with Sami Zayn. So now begs the question, where does Sami go now? You know, he's fallen short of winning that World Heavyweight Championship, the Undisputed WWE Championship, something that, you know, he said he needs, he has to have, he has to win. Then he goes and takes a step, and I even hate to say it this way, but takes a step backwards and wins the United States Championship. Okay, he gets another championship, gets another belt, but then loses at the Trick. Now he loses to Trick, so where does Sammy go? Where does he go? How does he react? Because clearly at the end of the match, you had Little Yachty up here and you had Trick up here, and there was Sammy on the floor, just kind of like hands up on his head in despair. You can see that look of frustration, concern, disappointment. Like, where do you go now, Sammy? And, do you keep coming after Trick? Oh, my TV just went totally blank now. But anyway, that's okay. So where do you go? And I'm looking forward to seeing that. Now, here comes the most comical part of the night. And I watched, just so you know, I watched this after the fact. So I didn't watch this live. And I tried to stay off social media, so I didn't know any finishes. But I did see a couple of complaints about Danhausen's partner. I thought, first of all, his entrance coming out in the little car, I love. I think it's great. I think it's awesome. It's just so much fun. Danhausen is just so much fun. And now he comes out. We find out it's a Minihausen. Minihausen comes out. But it makes perfect sense. If you watched SmackDown, and I wish the commentators would have said this a little bit more, but I don't know. Maybe I just missed it. But on SmackDown, his cloning machine or the machine he was using broke. It was working. He was like, it's working. And then all of a sudden, boom, nothing. It worked. So it makes sense that you get a mini Housen instead of a regular size Housen to come out and be his partner. I thought it was hysterical. I love the midgets. I love the little people. I love them being involved for multiple reasons. One reason is they're highly entertaining. The second reason is they're so freaking athletic. It's unbelievable. And you cannot deny the athleticism of Minihausen. You know, granted, it's a lot of help with Kit Wilson and with The Miz, you know, with the Hurricanranas and the DDTs and the spinning all around. It's a teamwork to get it done. But Kit and Miz did it fucking tremendously. It was wonderful on how they did it and how they sold for him. I thought that part was really great. I thought it was awesome how Danhausen never even tagged in at first. You know, let Minnehausen start the match. He's sitting there, he's shining. And then when they shut him down for the heat, that kick from Kit Wilson to Minnehausen's head, I popped. I loved it. I thought it was very authentic. It was very real. I felt like emotion coming out of Kit. Like that's the biggest part about professional wrestling. That's what draws people in, is getting emotion out of them. And, you know, me being who I am and knowing what I like, when Minnehausen came out, I was even more excited than that being, you know, another superstar. I know on the stage dive with Glenn last week, I threw out the idea of something I had heard about John Cena possibly being his partner without actually knowing he was going to be his partner. He just stands there in his suit and does nothing, which I thought would have been highly entertaining as well. But I just thought it was entertaining, and I thought how they did it was amazing. Like I said, Miz and Kit did a great job of selling everything for him. And then Minnie's thrown. So here is my one question, though. Minnehausen is thrown back into the cloning machine, and then there's a bunch of Minnehausens that come out and start beating up Kit Wilson. How is that not considered outside interference? Again, this is entertainment. It's professional wrestling. Anything is possible. Anything can be done. But how is that not outside interference? Yeah, things that make you go, just think about it. But anyway, they all get involved. They're all over the announce table. I actually thought at one point Danhausen was going to tag one of them in, but they didn't. I guess that would truly be outside interference. But one of the visuals I really, really liked and I enjoyed was the Miz going for his finisher on Minnehausen. He hits him with it, but he picks him up in the air and his legs are dangling, and then he hits him with the finisher. I thought it was great. You know, I know some people complained about it being, you know, a mini version of Danhausen coming out. But again, this is entertainment. This is what Danhausen brings to the table. Danhausen is there to entertain us. That's what he's there to do. And that's what this match was. This match was pure entertainment. I didn't expect a serious match. Now, Danhausen can work. Danhausen can go. But what Danhausen did in the match was perfect for his character and the things that he would do. And, you know, I've seen him in other matches, and I've been watching him more. I've been looking at old stuff just so I can get to know him a little bit more, because I didn't know him all that well until, you know, he signed, came to WWE. But that's exactly what I expected. I expected a very fun, entertaining match. I think all four of them, or all 10 of them, if you include the other clone minis that come out, I thought it was great. I loved it. And I thought where it was in the card was brilliant as well. You know, you go from a very serious match to another kind of, there was ha-ha in the match. And then you go, you know, live on the actual PLE with that. Again, I thought it was great. Loved it. Highly entertaining. Can't wait to see more of Danhausen. Now we break into former friends and a student versus mentor match with Asuka and Io Sky. And I'll be totally transparent with you. I wasn't really interested in this match at all. I think part of it could be she's a great worker. I don't understand the whole Io Sky thing. Part of, I think, my problem I have with getting into her and getting into her character, and I guess it's really just like, maybe just summed it up right there, that's her character, is that she stops and pauses, for me personally, too long in between moves and move sets to get the crowd into it. You know, if you're going to go up to the top rope, for me, get up there, maybe acknowledge the crowd, do your hand thing, whatever you do, and then go into the move. But the things pointing in her head back and forth, I realize that's the character. That's like me coming out, backsplash, and doing my stupid dance that I do. So I get all that. I just think too much in between for me is trying to get the crowd, because the person you're working now, when you take 30 seconds to work the crowd, to get the crowd into the match, your opponent is sitting in the corner for that long also. And it's awkward for that person. You, as that person, you feel kind of dumb, and you know, you're sitting there forever. But again, I wasn't that interested in it, but I watch it. And as the match went on, the story they told and how the match unfolded and what they were telling me, I got into it. I got into the emotion of it. You know, the one thing that I really didn't like was the "We Want Kari" chants. You know, you did it at first when they first got in the ring before they even locked up. Fine. You did it. You got your point across. Move on and enjoy the match. The chance of it during the match, and the ladies did a wonderful job. Great job of not even acknowledging it. You know, I knew commentary wouldn't put it over. But, you know, during the match, the women did a great job in just ignoring it. And that's probably not easy for them, because all three of them, you know, in real life are friends. So that could not have been an easy thing. So as a wrestling fan and wanting them to be able to do the best they can, like, stop the chants for stuff like that, because they can't acknowledge, you know, it's getting over. I know the crowd wants to hear themselves. The fans want to be a part of it. And when you want to be a part of it, you now have the John Cena Classic that you can be a part of, because you get to pick the winner, whether someone, you know, loses, wins, loses, draws, whatever. You get to pick it. There's your chance to be a part of the match. Don't try to hijack the match with the chant sometimes. You know, the "This is awesome" chant is, in my opinion, way overused. You know, but anyway, let's get back to this. But you're taking away, because the two of them were focused on having this serious match, a storytelling match, and you know, then you know, you're bringing up Kairi, their friend, that could literally throw them off. But sorry, I'll come back. I'll come back to this. You know, they were busting their ass, but I thought it was good. One of the things I really, really liked was the Io hit the German suplex, and Asuka switched it right into an armbar. I thought it was great. Michael Cole was saying every single hold was an Asuka lock. I don't know if that's just her choke, if it was an armbar, because literally it seemed like every hold that Asuka used, Michael Cole was calling it the Asuka lock. So I just don't know. Maybe it is, maybe it's not. I did really enjoy, and I popped a little bit when they were on the announcer's table and Asuka went for the mist, and she picked up the computer to block it, and then they had that stare down. I really, really enjoyed the stare down, because there was a lot of emotion there between the two of them. I felt it anyway. I felt emotion between the two of them on the stare down, and then from there, you knew it was on, and the student now just takes over and starts, you know, bang, you know, flipping the just beating the mentor. Or, you know, Io took over from that point. And then obviously Ia goes over, she beats the teacher, she beats her friend, she beats her former mentor, and now the emotions kick in. You know, both were pretty emotional. They both got very emotional after the match with the big hug. You could see, you know, them kind of talking and chirping each other's ears, but it wasn't just a hug. I mean, that was a heartfelt hug. It was squeezes, like a body squeeze in there, like an "I love you" hug, like "thank you so much," which now brings the question of what's next for Asuka, because beforehand the message came out that, you know, well, not the message, her message on social media of, you know, is she leaving? Is she staying? What's going on? Is it her last match? It was kind of cryptic. I saw it quickly. I only read the one passage. I didn't read the second one. But it's kind of cryptic on, you know, is she done? Is she not? And then she kind of got out of the ring and let Io Sky have the ring to herself after their emotional embrace and their exchange of words. So is that a Asuka passing the torch from mentor to student, passing that torch on? You know, we're going to have to wait and see. You know, just we have to see. Well, listen, with everything that happens here, we're going to have to wait and see. But now we go from the emotional women's match to an emotional heavyweight championship match with lots of emotion here. It's family. It's family. There's always a lot of emotion when it comes to anything with family. The history of the bloodline, the history leading up to this with Fatu saying, hey, you know, you had an opportunity. You know, I was just getting out of prison. I was just getting out of jail, and I was trying to find my way on the Indies. And, you know, you're bringing all these family members in, and you didn't bring me in. And Roman saying, well, I brought Solo in, and Solo brought you in. Therefore, you're in because of me. You know, I see both sides of that. But at the same time, it's just going to be I was ready for an emotional, hard-hitting match. And I think that's exactly what we got. The story to start the match with Jacob being bigger than life, I thought was great. That was getting his point across that I need this title. I need to win. I don't want to. I need this. I need this to feed my family, to feed my kids. He could care less that Roman's feeding 107 kids and he's only feeding 7. He needed it. And I like that. And what I mean by he was bigger than life was Roman was hitting him, but he wasn't bumping. But when he would hit Roman, Roman was bumping, which was showing, you know, that sense of urgency on Jacob Fatu's part of like, hey, I got to do everything I can. I need to win fast, which is why I'm going for that tongue and death grip right off the bat. I mean, he went for it right off the bat. And then Roman gets out of it. And what does Roman do? Roman's thought is, oh, shit, he's serious. He's really going to use this tongue and death grip. Even though he used it on him the last couple weeks on Raw, he's serious. So what am I going to do? I'm going to focus on his hand. He takes his hand, smashes it into the turnbuckle, smashes it into the table, smashes it into the ring post. You know, his focus is the hand and the arm. But Jacob just keeps firing back and keeps neutralizing everything Roman was doing. And then just kept cutting him back off. You know, we got Superman punch after Superman punch with the kick out on one. Love the emotion that came out of that. And then the look on Roman's face after he hits the super punch, Jacob Fatu kicks out on one, and Roman slides back with that look on his face of, oh, shit, what's going on? What am I supposed to do now? The Superman, nobody kicks out of the Superman punch, especially on one. You kick out of the Superman punch on one? Holy shit, what am I supposed to do now? And he starts looking around. He doesn't know what to do. And then the let's go, Jacob, OTC. Let's go, Jacob, OTC. I was loving that chant. I realized just a second ago I talked about another chant, how you can kind of take over the match, you know, kind of ruin it. That's a different chant. Do we want Kari different? This is a good chant when they did it. In the spots they did it, because you saw Roman recognizing it. You saw Jacob recognizing it. And then Jacob a couple of times was recognizing things and then getting sidetracked by yelling at the crowd for what they were saying. But Roman had a clear sense of urgency from that point forward after the kick out of one on the Superman punch. He was like, oh, shit, Jacob's not messing around. Jacob's serious. Like, he keeps going for the tongue and death grip. You know, he's kicking out like everything I do to him. He's going back. The sense of urgency was there, and it was clear on the second super punch as he goes right for a cover, then hits a spear, goes right for another cover. Roman does his yell, and then right as he jumps up to hit him, right into a Samoan drop and then into the moonsault, and Roman kicks out. Goosebumps. I literally got goosebumps. As Roman's laying there after kicking out, Jacob sits up with the look on his face of, oh, shit, I just hit him with everything. I've been hitting him. I've got the tongue and death grip on him 2 or 3 times. I've worn him down. I've hit him with everything I've got, and now he's kicking out. So then Jacob goes for a swanton. It's blocked, right? It's blocked by his knees. And then what happens after that? There's an exchange of punches with both bouncing off the ropes, and then another tongue and death grip is applied. And Roman's now desperate. Roman's desperate. What does Roman got to do? He goes to the eyes. He grabs. He's doing everything he possibly can. Then he hits multiple Superman punches, and then the spear again, and then a kick out on 2.9. I mean, I guess 2.95, 2.99 is closer to three. But still, I mean, it was like a beat away, and then you could feel the energy from the crowd through. I felt the energy from the crowd through the TV at that point. And Jacobs right back up. Death grip reapplied. Now Roman's really desperate. He's doing everything he possibly can to not only win the match, keep his title, but at this point, it's the Tongan death grip. I mean, that's like the ultimate thing that you use when you're like at the last second. You know, you're like Roman had mentioned, you don't use that move unless you're in a bar fight with eight people and like everything, your life is on the line. Well, now Roman's life technically, you know, in theory is right on the line. Grabs the ref, pulls the turnbuckle off, smashes Jacob's head into it, spear to get the win. Roman did exactly what he had to do to survive. And that's all he did in this match was survive. That's all he did. Roman survived the match. Roman survived keeping his title. Roman survived Jacob Fatu for now. Because now Jacob's totally unhinged. Jacob's totally unhinged after he loses. Leading into this match, the question was, if Jacob Fatu beats Roman Reigns and becomes the world heavyweight champion, does he become the head of the table? Does he become the tribal chief? That was a question. The other question was this. If Roman Reigns can beat Jacob Fatu, does Jacob fall in the line? Well, I think we saw what happened after that, because there was no falling in line for Jacob. Jacob went totally unhinged. He starts applying the Tongan death grip over and over and over. You have referees coming out. You have Jacob tossing referees. You have officials coming out. You saw Adam Pearce. Adam Pearce took an incredible bump through the rope straight to the floor. He's knocking it. Shane Helms comes out, super kick. This one goes out, super. He's tossing people all over, six, seven people trying to pull him off of Roman Reigns. But yeah, again, the big question was, would he fall in line? No, he's not falling in line. No, he's not going to fall in line. And I don't think this story's over. There's no way this story's over. And you know what? I'm all for it. I'm all for it. I want to see more of Fatu. I want to see more of Roman. I want to see more of this, what's going to happen with all of this. You know, you have with the Usos, what's going to happen with them, and then with Solo. Is Solo going to come in now? What's going to happen? I'm all in here. And then they go off the air with Fatu standing over Roman Reigns, holding the belt with all of the officials standing behind him. I'm all in. I can't wait for Raw. That's it. That's kind of my little opinion, my little recap of Backlash. And yeah, we'll see you next time. And remember, do whatever makes your heart happy. Just don't suck at it. See you next time.